He began practice 25 years ago in the Vipassana tradition, and then began studying Zen in 2003 with Rushin Paul Holler, received lay ordination in 2006 and priest ordination in 2011. Thaigon speaks internationally on a variety of topics, politics, gender, sexuality, social justice, and their intersections with the Dharma. He co-created the Queer Dharma Group at the San Francisco Zen Center. He's got a BA in philosophy and religion from SF State and a master's in Buddhist studies and a chaplaincy certificate in Soto Zen Buddhism from the Graduate Theological Seminary, Graduate Theological Union, I should say, and the Institute of Buddhist Studies. So he's lived at the Zen Center for probably about a decade, and he now is outside and teaches all over. So, and we're glad that he's a regular guest teacher for us. So Thaigon, welcome.
Thank you very much, Carl. And I really love this group, and I love the opportunity to come and be with you all. And I want to talk a little bit today. So I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday that started as a recording for my podcast, and then we went to texting, and then it turned into a phone call. What was supposed to be an hour and a half or so turned into about three to four hours of conversation. And one piece of it was, he asked me, what was it in my personal practice that I find myself returning to repeatedly? So not even like, what do I find myself teaching repeatedly, or what do I find most important in my teaching, but what do I keep returning to in my personal practice? He wanted it personal. And I had to think about it for a minute. And I think that for me, there's a line that is attributed to Suzuki Roshi in which it says, the secret to Zen is two words, not always so. And aside from the fact that it's slightly irreverent and humorous, which I find really important personally, it's also really true for me that the situations I tend to face most often in my life are moments when I'm convinced of something. I'm either convinced that I'm right or I'm convinced that I'm wrong, depending on whether or not I want to be the hero or the victim. And so, and this conviction often leads me into anger and depression, frustration, you know, a variety of various roads, but it all stems from this idea that I'm convinced of something. And this is different than confidence. This is not, you know, I think that confidence is really important and vitally necessary for us to sort of function in the world. But that's different than conviction, in the sense, for me anyway, of even if I'm confident about something, for instance, I'm pretty confident that enlightenment is merely an appropriate response, has been proven true in every moment that I try to investigate it. So I have a little confidence in this, in that teaching and in that phrasing. However, it turns into conviction when I stop investigating it, when I stop thinking, well, is it true? Is it real in this situation? And that's always where I in my own personal life and in my own personal practice, that's where I get tripped up. And most often it's because I think I'm right. I like to think I'm right. I think of myself as fairly intelligent and have a few degrees and lots of time in school and done a lot of things in my life. And so I like to think that I'm fairly intelligent and I particularly like to think that I'm right. Often if you would just agree with me that I'm right, the world would be a much better place. And that, you know, it often leads me to discontent, and it often leads me to depression, and it often leads me to, don't you know who I am? and it often leads me to suffering. The dis-ease that I think we're all familiar with. And what I found is that the antidote to that is often Suzuki Roshi's Not Always So. You know, this practice of questioning, this practice of asking ourselves, well, is that true? It may be true yesterday, but is it still true? You know, I'll find myself often in conversations with people, and during the conversation, I will ask myself at various points whether or not something I've said is true. Not that I think of myself as a liar, but really, like, my ideas about things change, right? My idea about myself, my ideas about the world, my ideas about the people in my life, including my own family, all of these ideas have changed at various points throughout my life. And so sometimes I am still kind of holding on to some old idea that actually is no longer true for me, some belief that is no longer true for me, some commitment to privilege and power that maybe is no longer true. And so that's the great news about Buddhism, is that, you know, we're constantly asked to investigate and to question ourselves. You know, that's when we sit on the cushion and we're watching our breath, what we're really trying to do is develop the capacity to kind of watch what's happening without all the stories and ideas and opinions about it and about how it's supposed to be and ouch, this knee hurts and oh, I'm getting older and I can't do that anymore or blah, you know, like all of the stories, right? Can we even thinking like, oh, I have all these stories. This is a bad period of meditation. Like we're just asked to pay attention to that. And ask ourselves and not be so convinced by the story of what makes good meditation and what makes bad meditation or what makes good practice or what makes bad practice or not be so convinced by some idea I have about what it means to be a Buddhist, what it means to be a teacher, what it means to be a priest, what it means to be a monk, to keep turning that and keep investigating that and asking myself, what's really happening here? And I think that that's what's really phenomenal about my practice is that that interrogation, that questioning, that turning and shedding away all the stories and opinions and allows me to tap into a quiet and a settledness that sort of brings ease to those places of dis-ease. that bring confidence to the world and my place in it, and, you know, just my ability to function, my, you know, like there's this confidence that arises. And some people will, in Pali, I think the word is piti, but it's that sort of joyful ease that we know that the practice works. And so, you know, and then somewhere along the line, I get convinced that I'm right again, and I have to return to go, really? Really? Okay. Because it's always just the next investigation, the next question, the next moment of, is that so? And not always so. And I think that the longer I practice, the more I need to let go of the idea that I know anything. The more I need to let go of the search to know anything. The founder of Soto Zen in Japan once said that, you know, to let go of the need for intellectual understanding, that this was an experiential practice. So being able to turn back to what's the experience of this moment. And can I let go of the intellectual parts of my life long enough to get into some experience of what's really going on here? So I want to ask you, what is it that you're convinced of? What is the place where you could bring some not always so? Or not, and you could talk about whatever you like. But I like to leave time for the conversation, for the wisdom in the room to come and be shared amongst us. So, yeah. And just unmute yourself and talk. That's probably easier. Thank you very much.
I'm happy to start by reporting a recent experience. It was the Saturday night, I think, that Biden and Harris were essentially declared the winners of the election. And of course, this was, for many of us, a moment that was very pleasant. That was a good thing. And I called a very close friend of mine to talk about it. And before we knew it, we became involved in a very heated debate about what certain policies should be in the Biden administration. And I found myself, and both of us were feeling that we were right. And in the Theravadan stuff that I've done mostly, I thought of it as clinging to views, that this was my view and the suffering that came from it. But it was just, when I look back on it, I thought, this is this was crazy. We took, you know, this wonderful day, if you will, wonderful evening. And by the end of it, I was distraught and angry at a close friend rather than feeling hope about, you know, that change was coming in some form, at least. And I think when I reflected back more of it, it was really the fear of what's ahead because of repercussions, and that we both probably were, it wasn't over, if you will. The fear was still remaining. We didn't get to a more, you know, meaningful shared space. Instead, we debated about who was right about a few. So at any rate, just thought I'd share that because it was really up for me.
Thanks very much, John. The other part of not always so is also, nobody has to be wrong in these moments. For me to be right, you don't have to be wrong. We can both be right, even though our views are disparate. And that to me has been really helpful. When I'm clinging to those views, when I'm stuck in the idea that this is how it is, sometimes I just have to let you be right. Philip, I saw you unmuted.
Oh, I didn't. I just unmuted, but I didn't mean to.
Hi, everybody. This is Russell down in Puerto Vallarta, joining you guys again. Thank you very much, Daigan and everybody. I'd like to circle back to alternate nostril breathing for being right. My yoga teacher down here, Anna, for many years has taught the alternate nostril breathing. And when I came down here a few months ago during COVID, well, first of all, it's always been hard for me to do it, thinking this is fucked up, I'm not doing it right. I'm sure everybody else knows how to do this, but I'm just inept. Well, now she's decided that we should, at Shavasana, when we're in corpse pose at the end, do alternate nostril breathing, not touching our noses, simply visualizing breathing out of one nostril, exhaling and breathing in through the other nostril. And wow, that was really difficult to wrap my head around. And I've been trying this for a couple of months, and I have little moments of feeling like I get it, but boy, it sure is hard to be right. So thank you. Thank you for your talk. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and I hope that it's nice in Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah, we're just down the coast. It's a little warmer, yeah.
So Daigan, I very much appreciate your talk, and there's this situation going on with my family right now. My mother is living in the Philippines, and she, because the Philippines is in a lockdown because of COVID, she's been very isolated and reaching out to the family via social media and private messages. And my eldest sister, who is an essential worker and so has received the first shot of the vaccine, she and her husband, who is also an essential worker, are planning to go visit her in February. But my father is saying that she shouldn't go. And I'm sort of caught in the middle of this argument that's been going on between them for the last few weeks about who's right, right? Like, should they travel or should they not travel? And I've been, my take on it when this comes to my attention, and my sister this weekend called me and wanted to talk about it. And, you know, all I can really do is listen, right? And to try and take that middle place of, you know, we can all be right. Like that there's no, in a disagreement like that, right, there's really no right answer because the sides are so drawn and so convicted of their rightness. And what I do when I enter that space is just to hold open a space for the two sides to be viewed and hope and send energy for the possibility of a third option to be manifest, right, in some fashion. But that's a painful place to be, right? Because I sit there and watch people who I love dearly have their lines so well defined that they can't reach across that. But I'm convinced that really that's the only place that I can be and the only right place for my energy to be focused right now, but it's so hard.
Yeah. It really is. And part of what makes that really hard is that it's a personal choice that people make for themselves, right? And I don't get to control that choice. My mother decided she was gonna take certain risks that I felt like as a woman of a certain age and of certain health conditions shouldn't be doing. And you just have to sort of go, it's your choice, you know? And I can tell you my opinion, but it's really just that, it's my opinion. And I think that those moments, particularly when they're people I love, are way harder because I can't control it. I can't make her make a choice that I want her to make, right? And that can be really difficult because I hate that feeling of powerlessness and that feeling of, damn it, would you just listen to me? it's hard when the reason there's no right answer is because it's not up to me to say who's right or wrong.
Yeah, I wanted to chime in on that. My mom was sick some years ago, and a friend of mine who's a Buddhist said, I'm going to give you some advice, even though you're not asking. I thought, oh, here we go. And she said, you know, to be supportive of someone is to help them get done what they want to get done and not what you want to get done. And I've thought of that so many times. I think that when I get feeling about, you know, kind of righteous about my convictions, I try to remember, like, am I actually really being supportive and helpful to the person? Am I offering what it is that they really want? Or am I just trying to, you know, execute my obviously wiser will? Anyway, thank you, Dagan.
Thank you, Deborah. I may have to steal that phrase, my otherwise wiser will. That's a pretty great phrase. I'll give you credit a couple of times.
I just made it up on the fly. Accurate, but you know.
In the focus on the always or not always, yesterday I had a breakup with a friend he was breaking up with me on some level. And at the time I was listening to what he had to say and understanding and kind of feeding back and being what I thought was very kind of, and as well as expressing myself. And then in the not always so, 3 hours later, I was then feeling sadness and then the disappointment and then the doubts in my mind of what did I do and why am I always a failure and why does this happen to me? And so I was just very aware of the not always. So I was so convince, I mean, I was there in the conversation in the beginning, and then I was convinced that was like it, like I had done it. And when all the emotions arose, it's like, oh yeah, you do that. You think you're done. And then when the other stuff comes up, it's always a surprise. And for the most part, I was able to just be with that and went out and bought a big, huge piece of cake at Max's Opera because that fixes, you know, that fixes me at the moment. And, but I just was very aware from, you know, from your discussion today of the not always, and like, I can be unconvinced and honest, and then I get convinced about that so quickly, like, okay, I'm done. Like I made that happen and then I'm moving on, and that never works. I mean, it's always something else and something else and something else. And that's the hard part to be there for.
Thanks, Alan. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Diagon, and everyone. We're at the end of our time. So let's sit together for a minute or two and dedicate the merit. Okay, let's sit. So as 2020 comes to an end, let's think about all the people, including us, that have been affected by what has been going on with this pandemic and the sickness and the death and all the frontline workers and people who have stepped up and shown care and compassion. And may all of us and all beings everywhere be safe and free from danger and from harm. And may we all and all beings in the midst of everything be happy and have and find the causes of happiness. May we all and all beings everywhere be healthy in body and in mind. And may all beings, including each and every one of us, live with ease and well-being. And ultimately, may all beings everywhere be free.